A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to The Other Hand, a podcast brought to you by CJP Economics, a collaboration between Jim Power and Chris Johns, where we discuss the intersection between politics, finance, and economics. Our back catalogue of podcasts can be found at our Substack website, and that Substack site also contains our extensive body of written work. Thanks for listening and reading. If you like our work, please share with your friends and sign up to our newsletter.
Lots to talk about again, as usual. You, I know, want to talk about some of the comments that have been coming in our Substack account and also some stuff that's been coming up on the Apple reviews. I want to make reference to something we discussed in our last podcast about the use of the term ladies in a sporting context. A little bit of breaking news in that regard, if I might. I want to look at some Irish economic data that's been released over the last couple of days, just to keep people in tune with what's happening in the Irish economy. We had retail sales and weekly earnings data, which are kind of interesting. On the inflation front, we've seen German and Spanish inflation out today, both starting to decline. That's worthy of a discussion about whether we think inflation has peaked and is now waning. And if so, what does that mean for the future of interest rates? There's a lot going on in China. We've been experiencing dramatic scenes of protest on the streets, not seen, I think, since 1989 over the last number of days. There's two stories coming out there at the moment. One is that the Chinese authorities are becoming somewhat more conciliatory in relation to the COVID issue. And indeed, I noticed that the Hong Kong stock market was up on the back of that today. But there's also a rumbling sense out there that the Chinese authorities are going to hit him with something serious over the coming days. So that's kind of important, I think. The dollar is losing some of its shine at the moment. And we've had two significant investment houses in the United States come out with less than positive comments on the dollar in recent times. So a packed agenda. Hopefully we'll get to cover it, and I'm sure we'll get more. So
I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, Jim, because it might sound a bit up ourselves. I'm going to do the good, bad, and the indifferent. I'm doing it in part to ask people to continue to put reviews on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you listen on, because they are incredibly helpful to us in terms of the feedback and the wider network effects that comments and ratings actually produce. I know everybody asks for these things. Every site that anybody goes on asks you to rate it. But it is, in fact, for good reason. The more people do it, the more feedback that we get, the more network effects that we get for listeners. And it really, really does help us. So anybody that does want to help us keep the podcast going, please, please leave us reviews and ratings on whatever platform that you use. So, I mean, there's loads of reviews on Apple Podcasts already, and some of them are quite funny, worth a look to see what kind of things people say about us. I'll start off with the worst one that we've had recently, and it's from somebody called Origin Sull Origin Sol. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it. A lot of people use funny aliases on these things, of course. Very few people use their real names for one reason or another. So this person, male or female or other gender, I don't know. It's not at all clear. They say, the review says that they're based in Ireland. And the review is titled, "Let's Keep the Status Quo? Question marks. Really?" I'm not quite sure what this reviewer was getting at. We often have said on the pod that the dystopian hellhole that is Ireland, the way that's painted in certain sections of the media and by Sinn Féin, is far from the actual empirical truth. That's not the same thing as saying that we want things to stay the same, because, of course, we have always gone on about the well-known problems that we face in Ireland and why they exist and why they are not going to be amenable to simple solutions that the populist party suggests that they are. But the review is really quite interesting because it is so critical. Podcast with two Fine Gael stooges trying scaremonger young people from change. Not a great English sentence, but I imagine, you know, forgive it, people typing these things quickly. Podcast with two Fine Gael stooges trying scaremonger young people from change. These economists are laughably inaccurate and use outdated metrics to justify an outdated status quo and no vision for a greater future for Ireland. Usual quips about populism, guilty, and poorly thought out argumentation and speculation on who or what could happen if a different approach was taken. 50% of the wealth is owned by 5% in Ireland. Question. Taxation rules in Ireland ain't bad, but look at the state of the place. The infrastructure, dilapidated city centre, houses that could be used for homes, over-reliance on foreign tech and pharma when we are sitting on a renewables goldmine. P.S. Economists are people who were too lazy or incompetent to be proper scientists. The fact that they say were suggests that that's the past tense. Instead, they make loose and vague predictions and comments which are rarely reviewed or tested for truth and accuracy over time. What do you think of that one, Jim? You haven't seen that one.
I actually don't.
So I wanted to see your face.
I don't look at reviews. You know, as you said there, Chris, we have always argued that Ireland is not perfect, that there are significant issues with healthcare delivery, with the education systems, lots of challenges there. And housing, obviously, we keep talking about it as the biggest economic, social and political challenge facing the country. So we never said it's perfect, but I hope what we do is try and bring a bit of balance to the debate, because people like that who made that comment have a very, very strong view in one direction. I hope that ours is more balanced.
Well, in that regard, let me read out the most recent review from somebody called Kira Tom. I'm not sure whether that's an alias or not. It's all one word. From Germany. So it's lovely that we've got a German resident listener. And the review title is Balanced, that word that you just used, and Controversial. Balanced and Controversial. Two great presenters discussing topical economy issues. Due to the difference of their outlook and presentation manner, this show is a continuous source of balanced and at the same time controversial insights. Thank you, guys. Well, thank you, Kira Tom. That's very lovely. I'm now going to upset you with another very recent review, this time from somebody called Jiminio from Ireland, in which this nice person gives us 5 stars. That's great. And the review is a short review and it's titled Super Pod. And Jim, I hope you're sitting down, because the review is one sentence of 5 words. And all it says is Chris Johns is absolutely superb. All right, I'll move swiftly on to another one. Good analysis on Ireland, EU and the world. I do not agree with all of their conclusions, ex cryptocurrency, but I always appreciate the wisdom of their insights and their ability to highlight economic data I otherwise would skim over. That's from somebody in Washington, D.C., which is really, really nice. I'll conclude. There's loads of these things. And so, as I say, some are good, some are bad, some are indifferent. But some of them ask us questions. And so I apologize if you have asked a question in a review, if we haven't got around to all of them. It's just a question of resources and time. But we will try to get round to them eventually, one way or another. This is from somebody in Ireland called Johnny D. 1985. Love your podcast and broad range of areas it covers. Have you covered Switzerland? Now, this is an interesting one, because we haven't really, to be honest. Have you covered Switzerland and how they have, if I'm correct, the lowest inflation in Europe, and if whatever they are doing to contain it can be applied in Ireland, or Europe as a whole? It's a great question. And I think we could devote a whole podcast to Switzerland. I don't know how many people apart from Johnny D would be interested in Switzerland. Of course, it's got very unique characteristics. The Swiss franc is independent of the euro and is managed by the Swiss National Bank. Switzerland has a peculiar structure to its economy. It's got lots of big pharmaceutical and other commercial companies, but of course it's got an enormous financial sector and has an awful lot of inflows, so that the Swiss franc historically at least is always strong, and that helps them to keep a lid on inflation. I won't talk much more about Switzerland, but if anybody else has questions like that, or economies or aspects of particular economies that they're interested in that we don't cover, keep the questions coming, because it is really helpful for us, I think, to answer people's questions. Now, I'll conclude this bit of the pod with a recent, very thoughtful comment from somebody in, I think, the UK. It's an interesting perspective because it talks about a niche area that we deliberately have tried to cover, given who we are. David says, "I'm enjoying this podcast immensely, especially the UK-Ireland mix between you and Jim. That's important to us because we do think the Anglo-Irish aspect of our podcasts is not covered elsewhere. It is a unique feature of what we do." And he goes on to say, "David, you can't find this anywhere else easily. Your exquisite articulation combined with Jim's enchanting accent, he's good at numbers, that boy, makes for something unique. You've got a charming accent." I could talk about your accent in all sorts of different ways, Jim. I'm not sure I'd call it charming. Anyway, that's my prejudice. Most UK citizens...
Enchanting, he used.
Exquisite. No, he said exquisite. No, I'm exquisite. You're enchanting. Sorry.
Yes, indeed, Chris. Sorry. It's a Waterford accent, okay?
Is that in Ireland somewhere, is it? Most, he goes on to say, most UK citizens are completely oblivious to Irish matters. And in that, he's 100% right. And your podcast is the best remedy for this. It gives a totally fresh perspective. I love the episode with Chris Gray. We've spoken about that a lot, who I have followed from the outset. So listening to the three of you was like a sort of reunion. But this is what I want to find out, he goes on. What have the two of you got against Sinn Féin? So in a way, in a much more polite way, he's echoing remarks from that listener from Australia. What have the two of you got against Sinn Féin, and more particularly their shot at reuniting Ireland? I am agnostic on this whole thing. I would really like this cleared up, if you could, as it seems to be the elephant in the room in your podcast. Well, I'll leave you to say whatever you like about that, but I've written on the website, this comment is there, unlike the reviews, this comment is actually on our Substack site, and that's another vehicle for people to ask us questions, to leave comments, to hurl abuse at us, do whatever you want. We think that we have covered Sinn Féin a lot and our reasons for disliking the prospect of a Sinn Féin-led government. And I summarise those views in my response to David's thoughtful question. But Jim, what do you think?
I have to say, I appreciate David's comments, and it's an interesting perspective on the Sinn Féin issue. I have no problem whatsoever with Sinn Féin's notion and drive towards a united Ireland. I would point out that the economics and politics of achieving united Ireland, which I do think is inevitable over the next couple of decades, it is not going to be straightforward. It is going to be challenging. Politically, there is a large part of the population up there that does not want a united Ireland. We're not quite sure what percentage, but there is a significant minority, I would think, at this stage, who do not want a united Ireland. So that would have to be dealt with. From an economic perspective, Northern Ireland is a strange economy in the sense that it has a very heavy reliance on the public sector, on the state sector, doesn't have a lot of foreign direct investment, although it has improved since the peace process in the late 90s. But and also the fact that we saw in the last few days a report from the ESRI and some others looking at the productivity performance in Northern Ireland compared to Ireland. And productivity down here is 40% higher than up north. And of course, Northern Ireland gets a significant amount of subvention, financial subvention from Her Majesty, His Highness's government in London at this juncture. So, you know,
He's been upgraded from His Highness to His Majesty now. So you need to get that right. He's no longer His Highness. He's His Majesty. All right.
His Majesty. OK, forgive my ignorance of the UK royalty, Chris. There are significant subventions, financial subventions from London into Northern Ireland. In the case of United Ireland, I presume those subventions would stop. It's a question of how quickly they would stop. So I think it's going to happen, but I do think it's a long way down the road, and there are massive realities and challenges that we'll have to be faced into. I think my biggest criticism of Sinn Féin, quite simply, is that it is a high-spend, high-tax party. I don't believe that sort of economic model works. I believe it could do serious damage to what is a reasonably well-functioning economy down here. Of course, if Sinn Féin does get into government, it's not going to get in as the single largest party. And in fact, the latest opinion polls at the weekend show a 4% decline in Sinn Féin. And this has been a bit of a trend in recent months. The reasons are not clear, other than I think what happened in the UK with the mini budget and the market reaction to that maybe got some people thinking about how poor economic policy and poor politics can lead to significantly negative financial market and economic outcomes. And also there's a lot of a whiff of gangland stuff around the Sinn Féin party at the moment, particularly in the context of a court case that's going on at the minute. But anyway, you know, having said that, if Sinn Féin is part of a government next time, it remains to be seen what element of its policies it can actually implement. Will it, in a coalition arrangement, have to water down some of those proposals? I suspect it will. That is the nature of coalition government. So maybe it wouldn't be the disaster for the economy that I sometimes fear. But looking at their economic policies per se at the moment, personally, I wouldn't see them as being good for the Irish economy.
Let's move on then from discussing our gratitude, really, for people's comments, questions, and anything else that they have to say about the pod. It is great that we just have so many listeners now and so many people interacting with us. And I think that if we can create something of a community, that's fantastic.
Hey, Chris, can I just touch on an issue that came up last Friday? And that was my reference to a lady footballer in Barcelona, which you took great umbrage to.
Not me, mate. I was just telling you what other people take umbrage at. I'm just the messenger here. Don't shoot me.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Funnily enough, Chris, I got a message the following day from somebody who's listened to the pod. I am a member of Temple Oak Sing Street GA Club here in Dublin, and my two sons play for that club. They have a ladies section, okay? And I say a ladies section because at the moment in Dublin, the body that looks after ladies Gaelic football is called the Dublin Ladies Gaelic Football Association. But the interesting point is that next weekend, that body is having its annual congress. And Temple Oak Sing Street, the club of which I am a member, has a motion before that Congress to change the name from Dublin Ladies Gaelic Football Association to the Women's Gaelic Football Association. The rationale for that is because the concept lady, as they see it, as some people see it at least, has sort of resonances of quietly dignified supportive roles being played by these ladies, whereas the reality is they see themselves as pace setters, as leaders, as athletes, as being hard and being competitive.
And I think you put it quite mildly there, Jim, that as a couple of feminist women put it to me when I asked them about this again recently, they say the use of the word lady just has a resonance with centuries of the patriarchy and all that went with it. and it's a term that should not be used. That's their perspective, and that's why I think you're getting motions like this at the Temple of GAA.
Yeah, well, that's why I got back to Mastin and why they were pushing for this motion, which has unanimous support within the women's section of the club. So it's interesting, and I certainly have learned a lesson from last Friday. You live and learn.
We all live and learn, don't we? Okay. Thanks to all our listeners. The situation in China, of course, is occupying an awful lot of headlines. And indeed, we could resurrect our famous COVID corner from a little while ago during the pandemic when we used to discuss these issues. As I think I said on the pod recently, China is really in a bind because what we've learnt about COVID, and in particular its zero COVID strategy, and indeed anybody else's zero COVID strategy, is that unless you are an island, and on that island you can quite literally, if you can seal yourself off from the rest of the world, zero COVID can be made to work. But it's a forever strategy. If you can get zero COVID to work and then immunize your population with a vaccine that works, you can then open up and then create what we've got, which is a hybrid vaccinated and population that's basically had COVID. And the reason why Omicron is something that we are now living with, it hasn't gone away. There's still lots of people that have it. The reason why hospitalizations and deaths have gone on is that the best scientists seem to think that we have a kind of a hybrid immunity from both vaccination and prior infection. I saw one scientist the other day write an article saying the reason why we're living with COVID is that Omicron is much milder than all previous variants. And I saw another equally respected scientist say, the reason why we're living with Omicron is not because it's milder than previous variants. It's just as bad, just as awful. It's just that we have this better hybrid immunity. China hasn't got this hybrid immunity. It hasn't immunized nearly the same proportion of its population as we have, particularly the elderly. And it's thought there that the reason is that they have a suspicion of modern medicine. They prefer traditional methods. That appears to be one reason why the elderly have not taken up Sinovac, the Chinese vaccine, which is not an mRNA vaccine that in any way, shape or form has been tailored to Omicron. So in some respects, or at least one respect at least, they are immunizing their population using a vaccine that's tailored for a variant of COVID that no longer exists. So they're in a real bind with this. And I for one, don't know how they're going to get out of it. It speaks to a number of issues. Number one for me, though, is that it means that I think we should remind ourselves of the whole zero COVID debate in Ireland and why we set our faces against it. And dare I say it, I think we were proved right. Even though we are an island, we can't insulate ourselves from the rest of the world in the way that Australia did, for instance. China can't because it ain't an island, and things and people do get in that spread the disease, clearly, because of the outbreaks that we're seeing in China at the moment. But the real reason, or at least the equally real reason for zero COVID, alongside the health reasons for zero COVID, that Xi Jinping is pursuing it, is for pure authoritarian reasons. It's for control. It's to demonstrate the control of the Chinese Communist Party over its population. And it's pure authoritarianism. And zero COVID appeals to people like Xi Jinping. It appeals to authoritarians. I'm not saying that every zero COVID proponent in Ireland, for example, was authoritarian. But when the next pandemic arrives, hopefully long after we've shuffled off this mortal coil, Jim, I hope people remember and ask the question, why are you proposing zero COVID? Is it because you genuinely think that there are health benefits and it is a policy that is workable here? Or are you just some authoritarian basket case?
Yeah, I think it's an authoritarian bastard case, to be honest. I think
not all of them, Jim. In fairness, we've both got friends who were zero COVID people that we just respectfully disagreed with. They weren't authoritarian basket cases, but certainly some of them were, weren't they?
Yeah, but the whole zero COVID strategy, that's what it basically represents. It's this view that you can totally control people's lives. And the Chinese, and it's good to see, even though I would fear where it's all going to end, but it's good to see the Chinese rising up against this. And as I said in my introduction, we're seeing the largest protest since 1989, Tiananmen Square. Unfortunately, we know how that ended. So you would be worried about how the Chinese authorities will respond to this. It is, I think, symptomatic of serious problems in China at the moment, in the sense that Xi Jinping has just been ratified for a third five-year term. So he's becoming a president for life. So China very definitely is becoming more authoritarian. It's becoming less free market and is going back towards a more centrally controlled economy again. That does not bode well for the Chinese economy. And as the world's second largest economy, as we've discussed in the past, that's not particularly good news for the global economy. It's really, really interesting to see how this evolves over the coming weeks. I don't believe it's the end of Xi Jinping. I don't believe it represents a fundamental change. I think the Chinese authorities, if necessary, will react with whatever force is required to get this situation back under control. All I can say is that, number one, I wouldn't like to live in China. Number two, I would not like to be an investor in China at this juncture.
Yeah, Apple apparently are going to be short 6 million iPhones as a result of the shutdown of Apple's production facilities in China. That's an example, a particular example of what you're talking about there. The economic consequences of this is that the Chinese economy is not going to grow, or at best, it's not going to grow by as much as it would otherwise have done. It could easily, I think, if this persists, go into recession, which is unheard of in China.
Chris, can I ask you, are you aware of the specific issues with Apple in China? Why?
Only that one of the main manufacturers of iPhones is a company called Foxconn, and their workers have been revolting. There have been some horrible videos shared on social media of them getting beaten by security guards as they've been locked down as a result of outbreaks either in the factory or in the communities where they live. And as a result, I'm not sure if they're actually on strike, but certainly output is being severely damaged by the Chinese lockdown. And the wider economic effects of this are clear, that China will be importing less from the rest of the world. So if you're a company selling to China, you might be worried about that. If we're buying stuff that's made in China, there may be less of it around, i.e. things like iPhones. One of the slightly more sort of silver lining to that particular cloud type things is that it means that the commodities that China consumes, particularly oil and gas, will be lower in price than they would otherwise have been. And one of the things that has contributed to lower oil prices recently has been shrinking Chinese demand, or Chinese demand for oil being less than it would otherwise have been. It's gotten so bad, the oil price thing, that OPEC is talking about further output cuts. And of course, that's OPEC plus, where the plus sign means Russia. And no doubt they're pressing for this. So it has all of these things affect everything else. And the fact that it's lowering energy prices, I think we, on a cold day here, I think that we should be grateful at least for that.
German inflation in November fell from 11.6% to 11.3%. And within that, energy price inflation, okay, it's still running at high levels in excess of 38%, but wow, it is declining significantly. These are year-on-year comparisons. So you would expect, as we go through 2023, these year-on-year comparisons will deliver much lower headline inflation numbers, as is the case here in Ireland and indeed in the United Kingdom and many countries at the moment. Food is still a massive issue, and German food price inflation is currently running at 21% year-on-year. That's more than twice what we have here in Ireland at the moment. But it just shows you, I think that's really going to be the pressure point for many countries over the coming months on the food side. And in Spain, the headline rate has fallen from 7.3% to 6.8%. So certainly that whole energy argument and how China feeds into that is starting to reflect itself in measured inflation. And it does remain to be seen what impact that has on central bank actions. I notice a lot of diverging views coming out of the European Central Bank, for example, at the moment. Philip Lane, the chief economist, is pretty, as has been his wont since the beginning of this crisis, he is pretty relaxed and believes that the pace of interest rate increases can now start to slow down, or at least the magnitude of those increases, whereas there are other members of the governing council who are still very bearish on the interest rate front and would like to deliver on Philip December Lane. 15th another 75 basis points.
As you know, Jim, I think Philip Lane is right on this one. And the other lulas on the council are just making classic ECB policy mistakes, which they always make. I think the ECB basically, over time, over history, have been very disappointing in terms of their ability to manage the macro cycle in Europe. Because you might remember that prior to recent times, they've never hit their inflation targets. So for years and years and years, they never hit their inflation targets from the downside. They were always below, and they should be criticized for that just as much as you should criticize them now for not hitting their targets because inflation is too high. So I don't think they're very good, actually. I think they're demonstrably poor at delivering on their mandate, and it's to do with the quality. I don't rate Christine Lagarde as an economist, for example. She may be a great politician. She may be a fantastic lawyer or whatever background she's got. I don't think she understands monetary economics. End of rant.
Here in Ireland, we got a couple of data releases in the last couple of days. The volume of retail sales in October was 2.6% down on a year earlier. But this is the sixth consecutive monthly annual decline in retail sales. And in the year to October, there was a decrease of 12.8% in the volume of books and newspapers, 8.9% in food, and 6% in furniture and lighting. This is volume now rather than value. There's a couple of things that are coming out there. One is that clearly people's real disposable incomes are under pressure, and spending on more luxury and discretionary items like furniture, books and newspapers is certainly suffering. And on the food side, I think the reduction there is due to the fact that people are returning to restaurant eating again. And indeed, I was trying to book a restaurant in Dublin for the afternoon of Christmas Eve and I failed. It's absolutely manic. Mm-hmm. So people have switched their consumption from eating food at home during the lockdown to now increasingly eating out. So it's a mixed enough picture, but it is suggesting that consumer nervousness that's been reflected in the monthly consumer confidence surveys is starting to impact. We today had average weekly earnings for the third quarter, growth of 3.2% year on year, well below the current rate of inflation. And it is funny, actually, that earnings haven't really started to pick up despite the increase in inflation. And as another point of note, the highest average hourly earning sector is the ICT sector. That's information communication technology. The average hourly pay is $49.50.
Wow. Okay,
so interesting. Yeah. And given that that's the sector of the economy under a little bit of pressure now, we'll see how that plays out.
Okay, buddy. I think we've run up against our usual time constraints. So that's it for today. Speak to you next time.
You have been listening to Chris Johns and Jim Power on The Other Hand. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please sign up to our Substack account, www.cjpeconomics.substack.com. You can download our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and other good podcast platforms.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.